How have you not seen this?
Seen this, as always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I am joined by Kyle Tolliver.
Hi everyone, hi internet.
And Peter Brick.
Hey buddy.
And we just finished the first in an ongoing series we're doing this month of Quentin Tarantino's films. We just did Reservoir Dogs, all part of kind of my cross promotion with my show Struck a Nerve, the Pop Culture Mixtape. This month's edition is, of course, the Quentin Tarantino, I'm Sorry Did I Break Your Concentration edition. So we're doing all Tarantino stuff all month as we lead towards that. Going to be releasing those episodes in the chronological order that the films themselves came out, so we're kicking it off with Reservoir Dogs. Tarantino's first film, he sold the script for True Romance, which was actually the second episode of this podcast that I did with Kamari Stevens a while back, to finance this movie. Of course, it was an indie darling. Definitely, it's very, very minimalist, but also very good, very dialogue-driven, and kind of our first serious taste of Tarantino as, for better or worse, whether you like him or not, a force that would kind of come to be reckoned with in the filmmaking world. So, knowing that this is his debut, this is his big, important film, even before Pulp Fiction blew up, Kyle, how have you not seen this?
It's one of the many classics that I didn't get to see. I didn't watch, like, a lot of movies growing up. Although, I probably... When was this? 92?
92, I believe.
So, that's when I was born. So, I probably couldn't have seen it physically when it came out. But I just never got a chance to watch it, and for some reason, well, I mean, most Tarantino films are, what, 7-8 hours long?
Yeah.
I guess every time someone was like, let's watch a Tarantino movie, I was like, no, thank you, I have to go to work. So I didn't know this one was so short, so yeah. I think I just kind of steered away from it.
99 minutes.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I have seen Pulp Fiction, though. It's the only one I have seen.
Yeah, and that's a longer one. That's almost 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Peter, how have you not seen this?
Well, Dustin, it came out in 92. I was born in 90. So, I probably was ready to see it at age 2. I just grew up in a very sheltered house, so by the time I was old enough, I just didn't get to see it.
That's fair.
Get around to it. I've seen, like, a lot of his other stuff, like the Kill Bills and Pulp Fiction and Bastards.
So is Reservoir Dogs the only one of his you haven't seen?
There's probably others I haven't seen.
There's Jackie Brown. There's
haven't seen that. Yeah.
All right, that's a popular one. A lot of people haven't seen. And there's Death Proof, I think, is the only other one.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Okay,
that was the one with the gun for a leg girl.
Well, that was Planet Terror. That was Robert Rodriguez's film.
Oh, wasn't released.
The Grand House double feature that was released. Yeah. Hey, cool.
Yeah.
So now we watched it. What do you guys think?
Oh, I loved it.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. It was really intense.
I didn't realize how. And now, thinking back on Pulp Fiction, which I haven't seen in maybe a year or two, but like thinking back on it, you can definitely see like his themes. Those were the first two of his movies, right?
Yes, yeah. It was Dogs and then Pulp Fiction.
Very long, extended scenes. Mm-hmm. Like you said, very dialogue-driven.
Yeah, absolutely.
Almost like mumblecore-y before, like, mumblecore was a thing. Like, not a lot of action, just a lot of people talking about stuff that doesn't necessarily have too much to do with the plot.
Yeah, but instead of just talking about inane shit like their feelings or monologues, they're talking about pop culture.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Which is like, that's one of the things I love, like, and obviously there's great moments, like in Pulp Fiction, the entire Royale with cheese exchange.
Oh, yeah, that's the example I was gonna...
So in this one, the opening scene in the diner is Quentin Tarantino talking about Madonna's like a virgin.
And why it's called that.
Yeah, and it's just, and that's just like, that's classic Tarantino fare. I'm trying to think if there are monologues in diners, because I know there's one in Death Proof, In, where it's a bunch of girls sitting around talking about the film Vanishing Point.
Well, and then in Pulp Fiction, there's like the date scene.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Pulp Fiction, there's a couple of them. And then in Bastards, you have the scene with Christoph Waltz's character, Hans Landa, talking about the German actress that we don't fucking know because we're not a bunch of goddamn nerds. So, yeah, it's definitely interesting. But, yeah, that first scene is just... Like, that's your introduction to Tarantino.
Yeah.
Unless you're like me and saw Pulp Fiction before you saw Reservoir Dogs. Or like same with dominant. You guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's like Reservoir Dogs wasn't on my radar.
Right.
Like, I grew up in a small town, so... like, it was through sheer accident that I found out about Pulp Fiction, even.
Yeah, I feel like Pulp Fiction was his
starting point. That was his mainstream success. Right. And then I went back and I watched it. And a lot of people don't like Reservoir Dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the reason is typically because they saw Pulp Fiction or something else first.
Right, yeah.
And they can't go into it. Like
Pulp Fiction's much more grand.
It's a much bigger film.
Much
like,
busier.
Like, this movie, the majority of this movie takes place in that warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, even with the flashbacks and the character reveals and stuff. Like,
it's not a whole lot.
Yeah, like, well over an hour of this film takes place in the same location.
That's
I really like that about this
mumblecore feeling I got from it, too. It's like...
Yeah.
I was looking, I was like, well, there's something big's gonna happen, right? And then I look, I'm like, oh, only 10 minutes is left of this movie. Probably not so much. It's like, halfway through, you're like, oh, this is it. Because I thought, at first, it'd be like a normal movie where they're going to follow this gang around, other heists, and then, like, halfway through, I was like, oh, it's just going to be this heist.
Yeah.
And they're not even going to touch on, like, half the people. Yeah. It's really just, like, those four guys.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Mr. Pink, Mr. Orange,
Mr.
Blonde, and Mr. White.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Are those...
And I love, you never see the heist in this movie.
Right, yeah.
Which I fucking love. I think that's such, like, a stroke of brilliance on this film's part.
I kind
of
wanted to see it.
But that's the thing, though. I think that's kind of what they were going for. It's like, they want you to feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't, like... Does he do that in all of his other movies, too? He kind of has that thing where it's like, no one really gets to see something. Like with Pulp Fiction, I knew it was a briefcase.
The briefcase, yeah. I think he does it in a couple, but like I don't think it's necessarily a recurring thing. Like it's not as prevalent as other stuff, at least not that I can think of off the top of my head. Because there's a lot of stuff that like that they don't lead to imagination in the later films. There is a lot of misdirection in his later films, though.
Right.
I don't want to get into the other stuff too much, just because we're going to be hitting on those later.
Yeah.
Obviously. But yeah, but I do like... I think it's really cool that we never see the heist.
Yeah.
And I think it's great that a heist movie is centered around never seeing the heist.
Right.
It'd be like Ocean's 11 without that big reveal montage at the end of how they did it.
Yeah, because I sort of always... It just seems, at this point, just so cheap to, like, show the end results.
Yeah.
And be, like, 24 hours earlier, and then, like, lead up to it.
Yeah, like that kind of Saw reveal. Like,
yeah.
At the end of each of those movies.
Right, it's just kind of...
Like, oh, let's get this orchestra. Boom, boom,
right.
Boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Boom, boom, boom. Well, this one was just more of just, like, a bottle episode.
Yeah.
Much more expensive than normal bottle episodes.
But it's done very well, and it sucks that bottle episodes have such a negative connotation with them, just because they're often done so poorly.
Yeah. Well, it's just a mid-season, like, way to keep money in the budget.
But then I have no problem with it in shows, it's just that so many shows do it lazily.
Right.
Like, Community has a great bottle episode, and one of the best episodes of Breaking Bad is a fucking bottle episode.
So I've not seen Breaking Bad.
Oh, man.
Is that with The Fly?
Yeah, the Fly episode. Directed by Rian Johnson, same guy that did Brick and Looper and Brothers Bloom.
I like that.
It's a fucking amazing episode. It's so good. And it's just Jesse and Walter in a lab
for the entire 60-episode series of this podcast. Just watching all of Breaking Bad.
It's a great show. Like, I'm due for a rewatch, and I would still probably miss stuff on another viewing.
Yeah.
But again, it's one of those things. And we were talking about it when we did Pulp Fiction, because we recorded that, but it'll be released after this. Where, like, Tarantino films, just like show like Breaking Bad or Coen Brothers films are things that reward repeat viewings.
Right.
And I love that. I think that's really great.
Yeah. I also really love the, and the more I watched this movie, the more I loved it, is like that sort of like behind, like the cameraman was just following everyone, kind of just like that, you know, kind of shaky natural.
Yeah, yeah.
Up
yeah.
close, like everything was right up close and just kind of felt.
Yeah.
It kind of made it seem more like HD and real, even though, like, you know, it was made in 92 and you got the, yeah. I like that. It felt like kind of personal.
Yeah.
Especially for stuff where, like, when they do show after the heist, where, like, Mr. Pink, like, takes that car and stuff. It's really cool that how they did that.
Yeah.
Every time those guys would, like, make a big move, they would, like, zoom in close and kind of captured just the reaction to it.
Yeah.
Because it is one of those movies where when someone would get shot, it wasn't like a. It's just kind of like they would just fall. And
yeah.
So you need something to kind of make it more dramatic, and I think that helped out a lot.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really great thing, this movie. Let's talk about how fucking amazing this cast is.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Steve Buscemi. I think he's another guy. Of course, I haven't seen, was it Boardwalk Empire?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know about that show, but he's always typecasted as usually the creep. Like,
yeah,
even in this
creep,
movie
like
where he's, like,
guy.
The least, he's the most down to earth, and then, of course, the ending, it's like, okay, of course
yeah.
he's gonna be the fucking...
And this is so early in his career, too, I think, honestly, like, this was probably, like, his first, like, super big role.
Was he the alien from Men in Black?
No, that was Tony Shalhoub.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Very
the,
similar,
the pawn
very
shop
both,
owner.
Like, yeah, bug-eyed.
Yeah,
like,
very
yeah.
creasy-looking dudes.
Yeah. No, perfect cast on that part, though.
Oh, yeah,
a bunch
absolutely.
Of just greasy guys. Has Tarantino been in all of his movies?
Yes, in one way or another.
Really?
Does he turn them into more of a cameo?
They're typically very small roles. Like I still think to date, probably his biggest role in one of his movies is probably either in Pulp Fiction or Django.
What was he in Pulp Fiction?
He's Jimmy. He's the guy that they take the Marvin to after
okay.
he gets shot.
Oh yeah,
he's the
dead
wife.
Yeah.
Makes sense. His wife's coming home. Yeah,
I remember that.
Okay, yeah, because I watched that and I didn't know what he looked like. All
yeah,
I didn't
notice that either.
And
yeah.
In fact, I didn't know what he looked like until watching Reservoir Dogs, because the opening sequence they like freeze a frame and show like.
Yeah,
so I was like,
yeah,
oh, that's him. Okay.
I think, well, and Jackie Brown and Bastards, his cameos are less obvious. Jackie Brown, I think his cameo is a voice on an answering machine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then Bastards, I think it's like his hand is in a shot or something like that.
Oh.
I don't remember exactly, but like, yeah, you don't actually like fully see him in those two.
Yeah.
Huh.
But yeah, everything else... Oh, fuck, Kill Bill now that I think about it. Although I'm sure he's in there somewhere, too.
Probably.
But, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, the rest of the cast is cool, too.
Yeah. As soon as it opened up and they get, like, that pan around the table, like, I mean...
Yeah,
I'm
see everyone.
Lying. I'd be lying if I said I knew everybody's name. But I was like, I recognize faces. I'm just
Tim
Roth.
Yeah, this is
like,
good.
Yeah,
cool.
Tim Roth is great. Like, I'm so fascinated by his American accent in this movie, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a British dude.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, it's... It sounds like really kind of off, but it totally works for that character too.
Yeah, just shaky and kind of like stumbly anyways.
Yeah.
Because he is up to something the entire time.
Yeah,
and then you
figure
out what it is. And then that's another great example of the scene, just like the opening is so cool, because I think the opening brings you in as like part of their like group.
Yeah.
And they're just fucking dudes who are just like hanging out and just like shooting the shit. And then the whole scene almost as like comic relief. Just like him training to be an undercover cop, like him training to go into the with them.
With that anecdote about
the, just like having to learn a story. And
Well, I love too that opening diner scene. Like, it's another thing Tarantino does really well. Like, you get such a great feel for those characters, like just on that. That opening scene. It's like a 4 or 5 minute scene,
right?
Because it starts with that Madonna monologue, And then it ends with the tipping tirade.
Which, looking back, completely makes sense that Mr. Pink is a guy who ran out at the end. Of course, it's a dude who doesn't feel like tipping
whatsoever. Yeah. But it was like you get such a feel for the important characters. Like, you get, like, because Mr. Orange doesn't really seem
to be doesn't say anything.
Like,
hardly
so
in that scene.
Yeah, it's like, and that seems suspicious in and of itself.
Right, yeah. But you don't know yet. And then you look back, it's like, of course he isn't going to say shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he's the rat.
And then you get, like, Harvey Keitel, who's clearly, like, very experienced, like, very professional.
Right.
But he's also, like, he's not to be fucked with. And then he even takes Joe's book away from him, because he keeps reading the fucking names. And then, of course, you find out, like, he's also very serious. He's like, give me my book, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want with it.
Right,
yeah.
And then Steve Buscemi, obviously, we get a great feel for him. And then Michael Madsen, who has maybe two lines in that diner scene. And one of the things he does is to just shoot Mr. White with a fake gun.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, which is funny, because, like, because then he shoots a bunch of people later that we never see.
Right.
And we just hear about it.
Yeah, he's kind of like the cool kid who's just like...
Yeah, the cool kid
who's cool.
Also a fucking nutcase.
Yeah.
So, speaking of, well, let's talk about that. Because that's one of my favorite scenes in a Tarantino movie. Or I think it's one of the most iconic scenes. No, the Steelers wheel scene where he tortures the cop.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The stuck in the middle with you.
Right.
He's like a shave on his ear.
Yeah. Like, that's such...
That's actually a deep fear of mine, is being tied to a chair and somebody just cutting on me with a straight razor.
Well, they dance around and listen to Stuck in the Middle with you.
I love that, though. I love the fact that they use that song.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's so great.
Just dancing the whole time. I was like, oh my gosh.
I do also like another thing, just thematically. He doesn't use a lot of music.
Yeah.
And there's no, like, background music. It's always
always
something that the character plays.
Yeah.
But it's always, like, perfectly highlights that scene. Like the diner scene in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
When they're dancing. It, like, kind of sets up what's going to happen next. And it's sort of the same thing here. Of course he's going to torture the guy.
Yeah.
By talking for 5 minutes about his favorite radio station.
Yeah. And, like, well, and it's... I love it, too, because, it's a diegetic sound is what I'm trying to think of. When they use, like, music, like, within the world. So, yeah. And it's non-diegetic is, like, when it's scored or something.
Right.
And Tarantino does that so much. Like, there's score, like, in the last couple, there's been score. Just because they've been, like, kind of more sweeping, more epic type films with Bastards and Django. But, yeah, for most of these, it's always... And I love that, too, with the K. Billy's Super Sounds of the 70s.
Right.
Which is as Stephen Wright as
Kay
Billy.
The most boring radio DJ.
Yeah.
Up next, that was.
There's so many fucking great songs in this too. At one point we hear "Hook on a Feeling" by Blue Sweet.
Yeah.
Shamelessly stolen by James Gunn for the Guardians of the Galaxy film that came out.
What are you doing, Gunn?
I loved it.
Has Tarantino gotten ragged on yet for being a racist?
I
don't know much about him.
Oh, yeah.
But then watching his movie, he pretty shamelessly just drops the N-word in the F-word.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For really, like, I mean, I kind of get it, because all the characters are sort of scumbags in most of his movies, so they are the type of people who would use it.
To say that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like...
Talk like that.
Again, up to this point, I've seen two, both of which use its first two movies,
and
Pulp, and both use the N-word pretty frequently.
Yeah. Well, and then Jackie Brown, the cast is primarily black,
and
it's about criminals, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Django.
Django, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering. I was like, it has to be a dude who people at least somewhat kind
of... Oh, yeah. Well, Spike Lee hates him.
Yeah.
Spike Lee
refused to see
Django when it came out.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, Sam Jackson actually, like, went to bat for Tarantino when all that bullshit was going down. And there's, like, I don't agree with it 100% with Tarantino, like, with that sometimes. And we had the same discussion when I watched Taxi Driver. with Sumark Turgalkar and Jackie Manti, because Martin Scorsese has a cameo in there,
right,
where he's in the back, and he just says the N-word a couple of times,
uh-huh,
and it makes me really uncomfortable that, like, he wrote himself in there saying that.
Right.
Yeah.
The
same thing, like, Pulp Fiction. If
well, yeah,
Tarantino is a guy who has that, like...
Who does it the most.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, it's... I don't think it's done for comical effect. Well, in Pulp Fiction, I think it's
yeah,
done for comical
it is.
Effect.
But, I mean, and it works to a point.
But, yeah.
I
but
mean,
at the same time, like, I don't... And again, I mean, this is... There's fucking three white dudes sitting around talking about race.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
So, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
I mean, like, I didn't know... I didn't want him to be, like, hey... I wasn't like, oh, is this scumbag? I just thought... I was like, someone has to at least poke fun at
oh, yeah,
him.
Absolutely.
At
yeah,
the
it's,
very least, someone
it,
has...
It's a fairly common critique. I know when I first saw... when I saw the first couple Tarantino movies, like... I used to be hypersensitive about it. But, like, it's not... I don't feel like it's excessive. And even in Django, like, they say it a lot, but it was also, like... You know, this is also a time where, you know, black people were
right.
not people.
Right.
So, like,
yeah,
it's, yeah, my, like, your grievance with that movie shouldn't be they're saying the N-word. And should
right.
be like, oh, hey, remember that dark time in our country's history when, you know, people could own people?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's, I do think it's excessive sometimes, but I don't think it's done because Tarantino's a racist.
Right.
Or because...
Yeah.
He's a shitty human being or anything. It's
no,
like,
I can see the point and like
yeah,
when he
I,
uses it.
I do. I think it serves a purpose. So, but yeah, it's certainly there are definitely people that he's come under heavy criticism for stuff like that.
Yeah,
but then at the same time, like watch a fucking Scorsese movie, watch
right?
So,
yeah.
Something like Goodfellas,
right?
And like the I mean, they're not immune to it either, like.
Right, I know a lot of that, especially a lot of like gangster mobster.
Oh yeah,
movies
absolutely. Like yeah, like typically
crime
related movies do it a lot.
Yeah, which again, I mean, you sort of have to in order to be to
yeah.
keep like the grittiness and the
yeah. Well, and even not from the criminal side, like even like we know that racist cops are a thing that exists.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's and those characters are in movies a lot, so. Yeah, like I said, it's. I mean, we can only say so much on it, but yeah, I think for the most part it works. Like I've never been so turned off from it in any of his movies that I would never watch them again.
Right. Yeah.
Like I would much rather sit through a Tarantino movie where they say that word a lot than you know actually meet Mel Gibson who. Has gone on cerebral,
right,
very
yeah.
public, real life racist tirades, not as a character in a movie.
Oh, exactly.
So,
yeah.
So let's bring it back to the movie now.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
sorry, that's. I'm trying to think of some of the other things here too. Like I said, Buscemi's fucking great, and that's. I did honestly this and Lebowski are my favorite Steve Buscemi roles, and Fargo. He's very good in Fargo as well. I haven't seen Boardwalk, but yeah, he's so fucking good in those. Keitel is great in this as well. This, honestly, it might be my favorite Michael Madsen role, too.
He like, was who?
He was Mr. Blonde.
Mr. Blonde,
yeah.
Yeah.
What
else was he in?
He was in Kill Bill.
He's, yeah, he's in,
yeah.
He's Bud in Kill Bill.
What, like, has he been in any non-Tarantino?
The very first Free Willy movie.
Okay. Yeah, that's probably where.
Yeah, he's been in a bunch of other shit, but nothing I can think of like off the top of my head immediately.
Yeah.
Like I think the best stuff he's been in for the most part has been
Tarantino
stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, he definitely plays the like kind of unhinged.
Yeah.
Trying to get back into society, but you know he never is, which is kind of like what makes like that last scene just so much better.
Yeah.
Is that like. It's a matter of why would he do this to us when he's been our best friend?
Yeah.
But also, you're standing in front of a cop who got his ear chopped off and covered in gasoline.
Yeah.
So it just kind of shows a whole, like, well, yeah, he did do this to an innocent person.
Yeah.
But also, he's our family, so he wouldn't
yeah.
do it. Just kind of like, how fine lines like these mobsters draw.
They're criminals, but they got a code.
Yeah, you can do anything you want. Just don't fuck with us.
Yeah, don't touch the family.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and then right after he shoots that cop in front of him too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, oh, this cop, I don't give a fuck about this guy.
Yeah.
But you never say shit about this guy.
Yeah. Man, fucking Chris Penn is so good in this too.
What was his part?
Eddie. Nice guy Eddie.
Oh,
Son. Stop putting that gun in my dad!
Yeah, and then he plays it. He fits into it thematically as well. The only guy who doesn't wear a suit.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
of course, it's his dad's, like, thing.
Yeah.
So what is that? Basically, his dad's just a crime lord, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
And then it's just a mobster family, because they never kind of explicitly say it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, so they hire...
Maybe not necessarily mafia or anything like that, but definitely very...
Okay.
Yeah.
So he hires strangers, obviously, because it's easier.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they bring Mr. Orange as to try to, like, break up the thing.
Oh, but I also love, too, is, like... Because they don't really go into, like, how he passed, like, and was able to go deep cover. Like, because in a movie like The Departed, like, you see Leonardo DiCaprio's character, like, he goes, like, he does time in jail, like, to build up his credibility. And then, like, Tim Roth is just dropped in and like, oh, yeah, like, we're not going to check if he's a cop. Yeah. And it feels like it would have been so easy to find out that he was a cop beforehand.
Right.
Especially because, like, well, even Marvin Nash, the cop that gets tortured, he even says, like, yeah, we met 5 months ago. Is like, no, like, this is a problem.
Right.
Like,
I knew who you were this entire time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, well, and that's weird, too, because, like, that makes me wonder, is, like, so, and they don't tell him anything. So Marvin couldn't have known that that Tim Roth's character was an undercover.
Right.
So, like, I'm just thinking of the scenario, like, when Harvey Keitel and Tim Roth are in the car, and they're like, they go to get, they're like, let's go get tacos.
Yeah.
Like, if Marvin had just driven by and be like, oh, hey, I know that guy. I met him a few months ago.
Yeah.
Like, not thinking anything
and
of
then,
it.
What, an hour later, they're robbing him.
Yeah,
a bank or whatever.
Jewelry store.
What was I gonna say about that? Oh yeah, that just goes back to the whole like bottle episode, like feeling like we don't need to know exactly how he did it.
The point is
he's an undercover cop now.
Yeah.
Kind of like giving out the
fucking dying man.
Yeah. Also, it just it probably goes back to just the times, just people dying in here.
Yeah.
Just, the fact that a couple of the deaths, Tarantino couldn't be like, okay, let's come back up. Now, don't drop to your knees before you die. Just fall. It just seems like you couldn't do one more take.
For which one specifically?
The old guy, Joe dying.
Oh,
was
yeah,
pretty
yeah.
bad. He just kind of was like, ugh! That was probably the cheesiest death.
Yeah.
And then, when the girl gets shot in the car after she shoots Orange, it's very clear that they instantly replace her with, like, a mannequin or something that just falls over because she goes completely stiff.
Yeah. Well, you also got to take into account, too, this movie was shot on a budget of...
Right, that's
little,
what, yeah.
Like, a little over $1 million. Let me see exactly.
Only a million?
Only
$1.2 million.
Yeah.
And it made 2.8. Against that budget. Nice. So, like, financially successful. Obviously
was that
critical.
Its release? His theater?
Yeah. Money. That's, like, its theatrical box office.
Which I assume it's probably made a ton more since then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's also, I'm sure it got a super limited release, too.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is why, like, people didn't know about it before Pulp Fiction.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Pulp Fiction got a very big theatrical release. So, yeah, like, they were probably, like, and again, put, like, things like them using the same location for the majority of the movie.
Right.
So, like, clearly there were restrictions. And so, yeah, like, that fucking standoff, that Mexican standoff.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, it's so good. It's so tense.
Yeah.
Also, that's the only part of the movie I could call.
Yeah.
Like, I was just like, they're all going to shoot each other, and then the shimmy's going to steal the diamonds.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, too. Like, at this point, like, again, just like, the ear scene with the Steelers Wheel song, that standoff, it's one of the more iconic moments in a Tarantino film.
Yeah.
Which is like, he's created so many of these, like, just over the space of, like, 8 movies.
Yeah.
And it's really fucking cool. Like, and there's a lot of stuff, like, he very clearly wears his influences on his sleeves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people that have been like, oh, well, you know, he doesn't have a regular conscience. But I was like, I don't think that's true. Like, I think he definitely, like, he's a pop culture junkie.
Right.
Just like somebody like a Kevin Smith is.
Right.
But I mean, his movies are good. Like, in spite of all of that, like, he makes interesting films.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think it's because he has that appreciation for everything that's come before him, because he has all these broad influences he draws from.
Right, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely cool. It's definitely cool how... It's weird how a movie could be, like, so good, when really it's, like, three kind of just... three true moments. It's just, like, the diner scene,
mm-hmm.
and then when you find out he's a real cop.
Yeah.
And then kind of, like, the standoff. That's, like, the summary of the entire movie. It's just, like, three scenes.
Yeah. There's one thing that, like, it always, like, it kind of gets glossed over, and I always kind of forget about it, is when Mr. Orange gets shot, he fucking shoots that woman.
Yeah.
Like, he's a cop, and he returns fire on a civilian,
right? Yeah.
And then you get that very quick shot of him just looking, like,
yeah, he's like,
oh, terrible about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing earlier, like, right before that, when he watches Mr. White kill those cops in front of him. Like, and that whole thing is such a clusterfuck. It's like, now I'm gonna, like, even if Mr. Orange had gotten out of that alive, like, he probably doesn't get to be a cop anymore because he killed a civilian.
Yeah,
right.
Probably not.
So,
yeah,
it's really interesting, and I almost like that they don't really go into it beyond that. But yeah, like, Tarantino, like, just with facial expressions, like, there are so many scenes, like, where it's so clearly conveyed, and the end with Harvey Keitel,
oh,
like, right before
she's
like, he doesn't say any, like, he just keeps making all these, like, grunts, like,
yeah.
and just growing angrier and angrier until he finally shoots him and then gets gunned down by the cops
right.
himself.
And then
yeah.
even that, it's like, you can tell, gosh, the whole entire time, it was clear he was, like, or at least by the end, it was perfectly clear he was a cop.
Yeah.
And then he just wouldn't, he's like, no, I found out too much about him. I wouldn't have told him my name
yeah.
if he wasn't. And even, like, at the end, it kind of, like, comes from almost, even though he shoots Mr. Orange,
yeah.
it's still from a place of like, oh, I care about this guy.
Yeah.
No one else is gonna take him besides me. I'm gonna take him.
Yeah.
They're gonna take me, but fuck it if I let those
yeah.
stupid cops take him.
Yeah.
yeah.
Because we all died and he's my friend now and so he'll die with me. And
yeah.
So kind of like, and then that makes you think, they're fucking strangers.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
like, and again, it goes back to what you're talking about. Just like, they had to have found out sometime before that he was a cop. Just like,
yeah.
at some point, realistically, they had some shit like this had to have happened beforehand, too. Like,
yeah.
that on another job or something, just where, like,
well,
they
Mr.
got
White,
too close.
He even mentions earlier, he makes
yeah.
a remark that he feels like he's jinxed to Mr. Pink
yeah.
when that first scene when they're talking in that back room. And he
oh,
says, like,
yeah,
he was on a
right.
job a couple years back. And one of the guys was a fucking a narc.
Yeah.
And the job ended up going completely tits up on him.
Yeah, because if you think about in real life when you first meet someone and you find out one thing that you have in common.
Yeah.
It's just like that. It's just like, okay, well now we're 100% more connected than we were before.
Yeah.
So just like the fact that they could mention one thing, like just a movie I like or just like a song I
uh-huh.
like, and that could fuck up an entire thing.
Yeah.
Because then they get like, they become chums and can kind of fuck
yeah.
up for everyone else.
Well, I love, too, like, there's this idea of, like, fate playing a role in this, too. Because Mr. White makes that remark that he's jinxed.
Yeah.
And then when Mr. Blonde gets brought in on the job, like,
mm-hmm.
Eddie even says, like, he's like a fucking lucky rabbit's foot. Like, he's been nothing but good luck for us.
Right.
So then they put him on the job.
Yeah.
So now, like, you've got, like, just two very obviously opposing, like, superstitious views on these characters.
Right.
And then the whole thing ends up just being a goddamn train wreck.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wait, so, oh, I was going to say, it was Mr. Blonde and Mr. White. I guess their names really don't have much.
Yeah.
No, not really.
Other
yeah.
than feeling a Danny Stratton punchline.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. cool. Is there anything else you guys want to hit on before we wrap it up?
No, I can think of.
Okay, cool.
You guys have been smarter than me on this one.
Oh,
I just kind of I watched it and was like, I don't know. It was one of those movies where I'm just like, I have to think about it for a while before I can really come up with, like,
what
I thought.
Well, that's the thing, too, is, like, it, like, out of all the stuff we've watched, this is definitely a slow burn of a movie.
Yeah.
Too. Like, it really, like, it just builds.
But then when it burns, it, like, burns out fast.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's like, oh, wait, is that? Oh, man. Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah, it's very rough.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's go around and we'll wrap up with our favorite moments then. Peter, we'll start with you.
Definitely shaving the ear.
Okay.
That whole standoff, just the music, the tension.
Oh yeah, it's such a great
scene. It would surprise me when Mr. Orange like just comes out of nowhere
and kills Mr. Blonde.
Yeah. I didn't see it coming. I was like, ah, sweet.
Yeah.
I like, of course, the diner scene. Probably
yeah,
my favorite scene in the
great.
Whole movie. I also loved, like, the chase with the cops, like, when they're first chasing Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
Mostly
yeah.
because he shouldn't ever be more physically capable of doing anything.
Yeah.
His build and the way he looks. And just, like, him knocking people over and just, like, always, like, it's kind of crazy to see cops just kind of disregard all, like, human life and, like, just get the fuck out of the way. Just, like, pushing old ladies into the street. Yeah, those are probably my top.
I would agree with the diner. I would also say any time that there was a standoff, like a confrontation in the warehouse, anytime Steve Buscemi was talking,
yeah.
was so good. By the time the movie is over, he has got, like, Mr. Orange is maybe the only person whose face he hasn't gotten in.
Right.
And that's because Mr. Orange spends the majority of the movie passed out, bleeding out.
But even then, while he's passed out, Mr. Pink is just like, oh, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
So he still talks down to him.
Yeah, one of my like absolute favorite shots is when Harvey Keitel punches him early on and like starts kicking him, and then like Steve Buscemi just like rolls over and like pulls his gun, and like they're both like just have their guns trained on each other, and they're just arguing back and forth. Like that's such a great.
And then
like,
fucking. Hands out.
Yeah, you see Mr. Blonde
leaning against the pole with a soda.
Yeah,
I think that definitely all like the character intros were just like perfect.
Yeah, fucking.
It's
solid.
Just like here's what this person is, and here's one shot to epitomize them. Just like the fucking dude just leaning against it, drinking a soda pop.
Classic Mr. Blonde.
Yeah, Mr. Blonde.
Mr. Blonde.
Cool. All right, I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you, Kyle and Peter, for joining me for this.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
No problem. Thank you all for listening. We'll be doing Tarantino movies the rest of the month. Thanks so much, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Tune in next time as Danny Stratton and I take Lindsay Martin through Pulp Fiction, all leading up to this September's Struck a Nerve, the pop culture mixtape all about Tarantino. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Leave us a review. It helps us out. Like the page on Facebook if you haven't already, and send any questions, comments about the show to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com, and we'll catch you next time.